Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show. He even hit the wrong bumper there, so we came in with a little ode to joy. That's all right. Great day. It is a Friday, I guess, so perfectly appropriate that we would be brought in by the music of Bach. I think that's Bach. Or is it Beethoven? I don't know. Beethoven. What'd you say, Ethan? Beethoven's time. Okay, there we go. Beethoven, as they called him in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. My pleasure to be with you. Got a big show ahead here on Breadbox Media. At the bottom of the hour, my good friend Dr. Allen Alday will be in the program. Allen, who is a monthly guest. He and his family recently entered the Catholic Church. Praise be to God. Allen teaches at the University of Kentucky. He is a behavior analyst. And so he works in the realm of behaviors and how they impact one another in family life and schools. He works as a consultant with a lot of schools. He's not a therapist or a psychologist, but a behavior observer and behavior theorist. And so we talk about issues particularly related to family life and to parenting. He's going to be on and dealing with a topic that came as a special request. I was at an event a couple of weekends ago and met a listener who said, you know, I love when Allen Alday's on the program. Can you please talk about whining? She said that while her small child was standing next to her. She said, please have Dr. Alday talk to us about how we can deal with whining. So your request is our command, and Dr. Alday will talk about that very thing. And then in the second hour, my guest at the bottom of the hour will be John L. Allen Jr., who is probably the most respected Catholic journalist in the English-speaking world. And John L. Allen Jr. will be on the program. He'll be talking about the website Crux. He's written an interesting piece on the Crux website, which recently went through a renovation, not only of its web design, of course, but it's no longer an affiliate of the Boston Globe, now in a partnership with the Knights of Columbus. He wants to explain what the goal is with Crux, and he explains it as balance within Catholicism, which, to be quite honest, can sometimes be a somewhat elusive goal. If you've been Catholic long enough, you understand that there's a lot of wrangling sometimes over things, and our unity doesn't always appear as such. So balance within Catholicism, we'll let John Allen, L. Allen Jr. talk about that. We'll do some of the other things we do on the program, like spin the dollar catechism wheel. We'll look back in history a little bit and also give out our What Were You Thinking awards, all that and more. We'll give you the question of the day in the next segment. 573-4-BREAD-4, if you want to be a part of the program, 573-4-BREAD-4. And you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post any response on Facebook or on Twitter. Now, for a while now, we have been broadcasting this program and several others through two different means. One is over the digital airwaves through Breadbox Media, through podcasting, through online streaming, through apps for your personal digital devices. And there are a lot of you we know who listen through the Breadbox Media app, which will continue to grow and expand and become even more localized in places throughout the country. We already have a number of different streams. You can check it all out at breadboxmedia.com. We have also broadcast on what's called terrestrial radio, which is AM, FM radio, right? The kind that you've got perhaps on your car dial and so forth. And we've done that as a part of Real Life Radio, which is a local Catholic station in Lexington, Kentucky, where we broadcast from. It's been on the air, oh my goodness, I would say at least 15 years. Really, there was a local Catholic who had a vision of having Catholic radio in this area. It was, in many ways, an illogical vision. But those are just the kind that God likes. And so what began first, I think, I'm not sure what the original name of the station was, but the call letters were WMJR, and it's called Real Life Radio, and engaged with the local community and had a lot of local support, which has been fantastic. Well, as of today at 6 a.m., Real Life Radio has been acquired as a Relevant Radio affiliate. Relevant Radio, which is a national syndicated Catholic radio network with affiliates all around the country. You may recognize shows, for example, like Morning Air or Drew Mariani and several others. Well, they have acquired Real Life Radio as an affiliate. And so if you had been listening or sometimes listening on AM, FM radio, here in the Lexington, Kentucky area. If you turn that on now, you will find that it is a relevant radio signal. Rather than my show, you'll be listening to Morning Air, which is relevant radio programming. And relevant radio, certainly a fine, fine ministry with its own purpose and its own mission and its own goals. But if you want to continue to listen to this program and some of the other excellent programming we have on Breadbox Media throughout the day, all self-generated, then you need to get the app for your digital device. Go to breadboxmedia.com. You can download the app for free, and you can listen through your own digital device, or you can also go to breadboxmedia.com and listen online. And the idea really at Breadbox Media is that ultimately we want to have localized Breadbox Media affiliates really throughout the country, which have the same programming, but during the commercial breaks and other announcements, there will be localized content, local announcements, local advertisers, all the rest. And the idea of Breadbox Media is that we are seeking to intentionally and relationally accompany people toward faith in Jesus Christ and toward the beauty and the richness of what it means to be a Catholic Christian. All that happening through Breadbox Media. And so we certainly continue to value your support. You can learn more at breadboxmedia.com. You can also be, by the way, a friend of this show or any other show that's on Breadbox Media. If you go check it out at breadboxmedia.com, you can see a little tab at the top of the page called become a friend of the show. And you can become a friend of this show for a small donation. You support this show and what this show is about. And you could also have access to exclusive content on a special friend of the show webpage. So you can check that out at breadboxmedia.com. Again, if you've got a question or comment, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a comment on Facebook or on Twitter. As I said, I'll give you the a question of the day in the next segment. It's a bit of a bittersweet day for me in terms of the local radio, AM, FM. I know I'm a Luddite. I'm an old man, and terrestrial radio in many ways. Well, it'll still be around, of course, but this is where everything is trending toward digital radio. But, of course, it was Real Life Radio, a local Catholic station that first really accompanied me on my journey to the Catholic Church as a Methodist pastor. I was able to sort of, in a clandestine fashion, listen to Catholic radio. And there were times, of course, when I would sit in my driveway at my house and listen to the radio, listen to the Catholic faith being presented, and would not want to go in the house because I wanted to listen just a little while longer. This journey that started with an intellectual curiosity and then became attraction and then finally conviction was partly facilitated through the gift of Catholic radio. And so it's bittersweet in the sense that the local AM, FM station is no longer our domain where we're operating in terms of what we broadcast from, though certainly relevant radio takes that baton and will do excellent work with it. But I do think it's not simply a sad day. It is also a hopeful day about the possibilities with Breadbox Media and what we can do to have our own particular, I think, area of strength in Catholic radio. And that's not speaking to the already convinced, but accompanying those who perhaps are curious or maybe have an emptiness in their heart that they can't even quite put a finger on. That is an emptiness, of course, that only God can fill, and he fills that, of course, ultimately through the beauty and the richness of the grace of his Son, Jesus Christ. And we would say that grace is most fully realized through the beauty and the richness of the church that he founded upon St. Peter and the Apostles. So blessings to Relevant Radio, and we hope you'll continue to support Breadbox Media as we go forth. First reading today, this story of Elijah. We've been following him all week. We had this dramatic showdown 2 days ago in the first reading in which Elijah and the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel had a contest of sorts. And, of course, after the God of Israel proved to be the only God, who hears, the only God who acts. And Elijah, therefore, after killing all the prophets of Baal, it's a very interesting story, of course, he flees for his life. He ultimately comes to the place, as in the first reading today, in which he feels himself alone, really, and isolated and abandoned. Wouldn't be the first prophet to come to that place where the zeal and the joy of his courageous conviction had turned to a feeling of alienation. We already talked, I think, yesterday about how Moses was probably one of the most lonely persons who ever lived. Of course, you've got the prophet Jeremiah, who says to God, "You duped me, and I allowed myself to be duped, preaching against my own people." And this interior misery that accompanies the obedience of the prophet, Elijah finds himself in that same place, exhausted, depleted, feeling alone, which was, in a sense, an illusion, as we'll come to find out, and we'll talk about this more at the beginning of the next hour, ends up on the very mountain where God met the people of Israel and made covenant with them at Sinai. But he experiences the power of God in a different way than Moses did. It's very instructive for us, I think. We'll get into that in the next hour. When we come back, our question of the day. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media. Minutes past the hour, you are back on the Mike Allen Show on Breadbox Media, your digital streaming radio station. Great to have you with us. As I was talking about in the last segment, if you've been listening at times here in the Lexington, Kentucky area where we broadcast from on AM FM radio, you'll now need to listen to the program if you want to continue to listen to it through the breadboxmedia.com app or through the internet stream at breadboxmedia.com. Real Life Radio, which has been we've been in partnership with Real Life Radio, has now been acquired as an affiliate of Relevant Radio, and so the programming that you'll be hearing throughout the day is Relevant Radio programming here on our local AM and FM. So we value your support at Breadbox Media and pray that you'll consider continuing to accompany and support us. You can be a friend of the show, my show, any show, really, if you go to breadboxmedia.com and look at the top where it says become a friend of the show. You can support it with a $10 monthly gift and receive exclusive access to online content that, as I said, is exclusive. Used exclusive twice there. Where's the thesaurus when you need it? Anyway, 573-4-BREAD-4, but evidently right now on local terrestrial radio, there's nothing being played, so I'm sure they'll get that squared out. But blessings to Relevant Radio as they go forward. But anyway, 573-4-BREAD-4. My question of the day, I'm going to be talking with John L. Allen Jr. in the next hour. He is the editor of Crux Now, of course, former writer with the National Catholic Reporter, then with the Boston Globe. In fact, this Crux Covering All Things Catholic website was begun as an offshoot, an affiliate of the Boston Globe. The Boston Globe cut ties, and now they're being supported by the Knights of Columbus. But John L. Allen, a veteran journalist, author, longtime Vatican observer, he's going to be on the program to talk about the web redesign of the Crux Now website, as well as what he sees as Crux's mission or purpose. And one of the things he talks about is balance within Catholicism. I've personally enjoyed Crux as a resource. As you might imagine, if you've got a daily radio show like I do, I'm spending a lot of time looking at various news sources. And so I'm asking a question, besides social media, of course, what would you say are the top three websites that you visit seeking religion-oriented news? Because religion-oriented news has its own particular niche, if I wanted to sound chic, niche in the internet market. What are the three that are your go-tos? You feel like they're trustworthy, They're balanced. Maybe you don't want balance. Maybe you want somebody who has your point of view only. Which sites do you go to? 573-4-BREAD-4. You can call or text 573-4-BREAD-4. I'll tell you a couple that I go to, and this helps me in preparation for the program. One is a website called realclearreligion.org. It's a branch, really, of realclearpolitics.com, if you've ever been to that website. And it's more of a series of links, really. They kind of peruse the internet for you. And at realclearreligion.org, any prominent story, blog post, commentary, article that has to do with religion, not necessarily Catholicism, not even necessarily Christianity, but a broad variety of stories. So I always go to realclearreligion.org. That's one of my go-tos. I often go to New Advent, which is more kind of along the lines of Real Clear Religion, except it's specifically oriented toward the Catholic faith. New Advent, I go to Crux a lot, which is John L. Allen Jr.'s website. Also, Ina San Martin, who's a regular guest on the program, she writes there as well. So I would say, by and large, those are my three main religion-oriented websites that I go to. But I look at some other things as well. I'll be interested in some of your comments. A couple comments that we got on Facebook. Let's see. Bill says he goes to Breakpoint. This was the online ministry that I think was begun by the late Chuck Colson, the former Watergate, the former chief of staff of President Nixon, who was convicted in Watergate, spent some time in prison, wrote the book Born Again about his own spiritual experience of conversion in the midst of his indictment and all the rest, and then began about the work, really, of prison reform. He was also very active in the Catholics and Evangelicals Together movement. So Breakpoint, excellent. I would agree with you there. Megan says Vatican Radio. Also like to check out the full text of speeches, addresses, homilies at the actual Vatican website. Now, wait a minute, Megan. Are you actually suggesting that sometimes when you read a news story about a speech, address, or homily from Pope Francis, for example, that it loses something in the translation? Sorry, I forgot to tell you I was shifting into sarcasm voice there. Yes, it's always good to go straight to the source. Thanks, Megan, for that suggestion. Megan says she forgot about a really good one, a blog. It's called Get Religion. It's not specifically Catholic, but often addresses Catholic-oriented news stories. Yes, I've been to Get Religion. Its title comes from a quote, I think maybe from Arthur Schlesinger Jr., the press just doesn't get religion. And then Aaron mentions New Advent, which I mentioned earlier. So we'll give you some more later in the program. You can add your own 573-4-BREAD-4. You can call or text. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your thought on Facebook or on Twitter. Interesting observation people are making about the current NBA Finals is that they're the most lopsided in NBA history. In fact, between games 2 and 3, in which I think there was a 60-point swing from the Warriors winning game 2 by 30, the Cavs then turning around, desperate as they were, and they played like desperate wounded animals, by the way, they bounced back and beat the Warriors by 30. That's the biggest swing between two games in NBA Finals history. Well, this has been a trend all through the playoffs, evidently, according to Deadspin.com. Through 82 playoff games. Wow, 82 playoff games. There's a lot. There's too much playoffs in the NBA. I'm sorry. The average margin of victory is 14.7 points, easily the highest in NBA history. 19 playoff games, almost a full quarter of them, have been decided by 25-plus points. And though we're only three games in, as they say, so far, this has also been the least competitive NBA Finals ever. And even the Western Conference Finals, which was such an exhilarating series, was not so much exhilarating game by game, though Game 6 was pretty special, I'll say. But not just exhilarating game by game, most of the games were not that close, but rather in the wild swings back and forth. So we'll see if that continues. Can the Cavaliers keep it going? You got to feel a little bit sorry for Kevin Love. He misses Game 3 for the Cavaliers, and the Cavaliers win big, and now you've got Cavs fans even who are saying, let's don't bring Kevin Love back. Maybe that concussion was fortuitous. Pretty tough to be Kevin Love, I would guess, right now. So we'll see how that all plays out in the next game. The other question being asked, of course, is what's wrong with Stephen Curry? Stephen Curry, whose production has gone down fairly dramatically in the playoffs over what it was during the regular season. And people are wondering what's going on. You know, he did have some injuries during the year. But in the NBA Finals, for example, Stephen Curry only averaging 16 points, 5 rebounds, and 4.3 assists in a little over 30 minutes a game. Hasn't broken 20 in what's called game score, which is a way of gauging a player's performance in any given outing. He averaged a game score of 24.6 in the NBA regular season and cracked the 20-point game score mark 57 times in 79 appearances. But in the NBA Finals, he's not broken 20 in game score even once. So, anyway, we'll keep an eye on Steph. You know, is he breaking down a little bit? He's a slight guy, and he has been having some pretty strong defense being put on him in the NBA Finals. So, all right, let's move on to the What Were You Thinking awards for the day. We've got a few nominees that we can bring up here. For whatever reason, there never seems to be a shortage. Now, this one's not that uncommon, it seems, unfortunately. This from Florida, which never is shocking. Collier Man's misuse of 911 leaves neighbors perturbed. A Collier County man called 911 on Monday night because his girlfriend wouldn't buy him vodka. He told the dispatch his neighbors were fighting, and when deputies showed up, there was no yelling and there was no scene. Deputies said it was a prank. The neighbors, of course, said it wasn't funny, that he did it because his girlfriend would not buy him vodka. Wow, is there anything more that needs to be said? How about this one? I'm guessing this is from, not sure. Is this from Louisiana, maybe? A Lafayette woman was arrested on aggravated assault charges after she allegedly pulled a gun on a popular pro wrestler during a match at Ringgold. The incident has prompted the promoters to consider installing metal detectors at matches. According to the Sheriff's Department, Patricia Ann Crow, 59, now come on, she's old enough to know better, was arrested on charges of aggravated assault. The incident occurred around 11 p.m. at the American Federation. I guess there was a big brouhaha in the ring. One wrestler was tied up and getting bashed with a chair. Crow didn't like that, climbed into the ring, and pulled she cut the guy loose, and then she pulled a loaded gun on the wrestler. I guess the positive side is their acting must be very good. But the winner we're going to give to a lawsuit currently in place over the bumper sticker and the slogan Coexist. Who owns it? There are competing versions of the Coexist. You know, the one with the Islam moon and the Star of David and the cross in it. Oh, ironies abound. Can't we all just, you know, coexist? We'll be back with Alan all day. This is the Mike Allen Show. We're right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show. Here with my good friend, Dr. Alan Alday. Alan, who teaches at the University of Kentucky, he's a professor in the behavior analysis department. He's not a therapist or a psychologist, deals in the realm of behavior and works with a lot of schools, public and private, as well as families, on how behaviors impact one another within the home, and sometimes how the behaviors of the adults can affect the behaviors of the child. And he's a regular guest on the program and a dear friend of mine. Alan, welcome in.
Hey, good morning, Mike.
Well, wait a second. We're not hearing you here. Let's see.
All right.
There we go.
Good morning. Again.
We always have that ready in case you say something I don't like, you know?
Well, you know, it has been done before.
We don't have a delay on you, though, so
oh,
you
know, no,
what's your language?
Well, you don't have to worry about the language. It's idiocy, probably. Language, probably not. So yeah, it's probably a good thing to have a delay on me, I'm sure, anyway.
Well, good. So you're, we've been talking, it is summer, but not a break for you. You're still in the teaching mode, even over the summer.
Yeah, I've teaching, start two more classes on Monday, so, and just finished up two. So it's been a busy summer, good summer, but just busy. So it keeps me on my toes, and helps me sleep well at night.
I have to wonder if, you know, there's not a summer is an interesting, context as a parent, especially of young children, because you've been used to a particular, let's say, routine, you know, get up, go to school. Plus, if your child goes to a school, maybe you don't homeschool, then they're out of the house all day and other people's concerns. Now, summer, I mean, I'm already hearing it from a college. Summer's boring, you know, they're, well, and I guess we've all experienced it, but probably a particular challenge for parents.
You know, I would think so, because, I mean, the parents' routine is off, the kid routine is off, everybody's routine is off, and so you kind of reestablish the routines and the relationships, and like, wow, I didn't realize this kid got on my nerves so much. I'm glad they go to school every day. So you know, it's a very difficult time, and I think a difficult transition for a lot of people, just because, you know, like you said, now I'm responsible for entertaining you. I'm responsible for teaching you. I'm responsible for feeding you. And I'm, you know, I mean, it's a very different beast.
Or if they, you know, or if now they go to a different place in the summer, maybe they go to, you know, some sort of a daycare type thing, or they have someone come in, you know, a summer nanny or something. I mean, they're just all kind of adjustments to be made.
And it's just a different, and it's such a different world than when I was a kid. And, you know, growing up in the middle of nowhere in Alabama, it was kind of nice because you could just, I mean, we just played, and I stayed home by myself and played and probably did a lot of things I shouldn't have done. You know, and I think of the thing, but it's just a different world now. I mean, you know, to where what you can do and the freedom. I mean, because I know we've talked about before, Gil, kind of, I had the freedom to go out on my bike and be gone the whole day, and as long as I was back by dinner, it was fine. I don't even let my kids go in the front yard without supervision, you know. So it's just a different world. So,
any good fishing holes there near Demopolis, Alabama?
You know, there's a lot of good fishing, a lot of largemouth bass, you know, a lot of catfish. Yeah, I enjoy. Actually, that not far from there is they do a lot of the catfish farms. So a lot of the farm-raised catfish that
sure,
you buy comes from there. And
I just have a vision of summer in Demopolis and a hairy-headed young Alan Alday fishing pole. Maybe I'm thinking of the Andy Griffith Show, but that's what I imagine.
You know, it was kind of like that.
Hot summers, I bet, in Demopolis,
summers,
Alabama.
You know, it is hot, and that's one of the things we talk about with our kids are, like, we go down there and they're just zapped. They always sleep so good at night. We're like, wow, this is really great. That humidity just, you know, it just
sucks. Like a blanket.
It just sucks the life out of you. Yeah. But yeah, it was a good childhood. We did a lot of fishing. So,
well, I think I told you this, but I was at a reception, not this past Saturday, but the Saturday before. Maybe it was this past. Yeah, it was this past Saturday. We had the ordination of some deacons. Mm-hmm. I went to a reception afterward for a good friend of mine, Spencer, who got ordained, and there was a mother there, a young woman who's a mother of a small child and who I know, and ran into her, and she said, I just want you to know, she said, I love it when you have Alan Alday on the program, she said, and if you would, please have him talk about whining. Now, she said that while her young child was standing next to her. I didn't want to make any presuppositions, but my guess is maybe she was standing right next to the whiny. So, you know, we talked about it, and at request, you're going to talk about whining a little bit today.
Yeah.
Whining. I mean, please talk about whining, Alan, please.
But I don't want to. I mean, You know, whining is one of those things that I think drives every parent crazy. I think for whatever, it's like the nail, the proverbial nails on the chalkboard.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, there they go again. And it's funny because I know we've talked about before, I don't have teenagers yet, but I know teenagers whine too. It's just different. I whine too, for that matter.
Yes, I do too. I just ask my family, they'll tell you.
But it is, whining is such an interesting behavior, and especially among young children. And I think that's where we see it the most, is among young children, especially probably the 2 to 6 or 7 year old range. And it's kind of predictable in some ways, because it's their form of communication. I mean, that, you know, especially the younger kids. I mean, we have a 3.5 year old who's, you know, he talks a lot and has a lot of words, but he still whines. And so why does he do that? Well, it serves a purpose. I mean, it's his form of communication. It's his way of telling us what some of his wants or his needs or, you know, the things that he's seeking. And it drives me crazy. I don't like, I'm like, don't whine. Tell it to me in your big voice, not your whiny voice. And, you know, and it is something that I think a lot of parents do struggle with. But I think when you consider it, that it is a form of communication, because, you know, you think about with us, I mean, if I come in here and I'm tired and it's like, oh, I've had it and all this stuff's going on, I'm going to use words to tell you exactly what it is that I need and what's going on. And I can communicate that to you very clearly. But if I'm 3, I haven't built up the amount of words that I need yet to be able to communicate what is exactly going on. You know, even if it is something that I don't want to do, you know, or something I do want, or either way, you got to think the kids are trying to figure out how do I communicate this? And what I typically find is if I whine, I get what I want. So I'll just whine. And that's what happens. And it just continues on into this cycle.
I mean, as you've said many times, you know, the premise of behavior theory is that there are, what, 2 things that can explain just about any behavior. Something mm-hmm. that the person is going to get out of it, mm-hmm. or something that they are going to avoid
right.
by doing it. And to look through all behaviors via that sort of prism.
And, you know, and honestly, with whining, it's the same thing. And truly, with any behavior, it's the same thing. And it's easy to say, but it's hard to do. I mean, you know, I teach people how to do this, but I still struggle with it. Because when it's your kid, you know, I can come to your house and listen to your kid whine for hours, and it won't even bother me. I'm like, I don't care. Whine all you want, you know. But when it's my kid, and that whining is just like, oh, you know, why are you doing this? And so I understand from the parent perspective how hard it is, but you do have to stop and look at it and see, why are they doing it? Because they wouldn't do it if it wasn't effective. I mean, they would quit doing it. You don't continue doing any behavior that doesn't get you either, you know, get you what you want or get you out of what you want. I mean, I can remember being a kid and, you know, kind of whining about having to make my bed up. And I knew if I whined long enough, my mom would make it up because she got tired of hearing me whine, you know. And so it was effective. It worked. I mean, don't tell her that. But
is there any sort of interior satisfaction, I guess you could say, that whining brings, even if you don't get a response from the person you whine to, that even if you don't, for example, let's say you've got a situation where you don't yield to the whining, but the whining continues. Is there a possibility that even if you don't yield, the whining will continue just because it's their way of venting or their way of expressing? You know what I mean?
It could be. And, you know, as we've talked about before, I mean, there's a lot of times whenever you try something different, the behavior is going to still continue for a while because it's, you know, even a 2-year-old didn't just wake up one day and start whining. I mean, it's something that they tried, it worked. They tried, it worked. They tried, it worked.
And by work, you mean the person capitulated to what they wanted.
Right. And so, therefore, if you try to not respond to the whining, they're going to still whine. I mean, it's a very predictable.
Maybe an extinction burst, as you call it.
It could be. And, you know, and it's something that we know happens. But, yeah, I mean, there's always the possibility. And within the behavior analytic research, I mean, there is the possibility that people do engage in behaviors to get a good feeling or to avoid a certain feeling. So, you know, we call that kind of more sensory. I think in our culture now, we've gone kind of sensory overboard because we think everything is sensory based, and in the literature, that's not the case. So most of the time, it is what are you getting or what are you avoiding.
We'll be back with more with Dr. Alan Alday. If you've got a question or a comment related to family life or parents or even your own behavior, parenting, 573-4-BREAD-4. Or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to BreadBox Media. Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on BreadBox Media. If you want to continue to enjoy the programming here, you can listen online at breadboxmedia.com, or you can download the app at breadboxmedia.com to your digital device. You can also be a friend of the show and access exclusive content if you just go to breadboxmedia.com, hit the button, become a friend of the show. Hey, I'm glad to have a friend of the show here in the program today, Dr. Alan Alday. Alan, who works at the University of Kentucky, he's a professor there, deals in the realm of behavior therapy, works with a lot of schools, public and private, and with families on the issue of behavior. We're talking about whining today. Mm-hmm. So please call with your questions. 573-4-BREAD-4 is the number to call, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Somebody commented, Alan, you know, I'm having John L. Allen Jr. as my guest next hour. Of course, I'm Mike Allen. You're Alan Alday. It's an Allen Fest.
It is Allen Fest. It's good.
Or as I like to say, you're Alan Alday and I'm an Allen Alday.
That's right.
Patooch. Where's I should have had a rim shot ready on that. You know, whining, as we're talking about here, and like I said, if you've got a question or a comment, 573-4-BREAD-4, whining has a rich biblical tradition, too, because the Israelites, they were famous. It was so much better in Egypt, you know, than it was here. What's this bread-like stuff? It's kind of bland.
Don't give us that anymore. We need to,
Even the disciples, you know. Let me sit at your right hand.
I want to be the greatest.
Yeah, exactly. So whining has a rich biblical tradition.
And you know, Jesus had to think, I just told you I'm going to go die, and here you are arguing about who's going to sit at my right hand. I mean, come on, people. But, yeah, it is. And, you know, and I have to say, you know, as I got a nice text from my wife saying, you know, whining is not always manipulative, and she is right. That there are times whenever kids whine because they're tired, or whenever they're overwhelmed, they will whine because they don't have the words or the language to communicate that, hey, I'm really tired, or hey, I'm really, but it still goes back to, you know, what are they trying to get or what are they trying to avoid? Because, you know, as we talked about one time before about, you know, if a kid has if they're attention deprived, they engage in behaviors to get them attention. But if they're sleep deprived, they may be more likely to engage in the behaviors that will increase the likelihood that you might pick them up, or you might rock them, or you might hold them, or, you know. And so as you think about this, I mean, not. And I appreciate very much, she's probably, I'll probably sleep on the couch for this. Just kidding, Carrie, just kidding. I won't have to sleep on the couch. But she, you know, I appreciate her saying that because, you know, it's not always that kids are engaging in these behaviors to be purposefully manipulative or to watch me, you know, watch me manipulate dad to make him jump or whatever. Sometimes
you pull the puppet strings.
Yeah, sometimes it is a very sincere thing But nonetheless, it still can come back to what are they trying to get or what are they trying to avoid. And whichever one of those it is, I mean, once you figure it out, I mean, then it tells you kind of what to do. But so there are some, what I think, you know, some things that you can do. But most
let me jump in and ask you real quick, Alan. Is do you think it's possible that there are even times that what we perceive to be whining is more a response to our distractedness as parents? Because I think we live in a very distracted age with, you know, all of our devices and everything that parents are so many times attuned to, and maybe we're not really hearing our child. You know, we're not hearing a legitimate need that they have, and so they feel like they have no choice but to continue to pester us because we're not tuned into them. Is that a possibility at times?
I think that's definitely a possibility. I mean, you know, you go to a restaurant where there's, you know, parents and young kids, and if the parents aren't paying any attention, then the kids will be kind of quiet. But as soon as their volume escalates and the parents like, shh, you're being too loud, you know, and then they kind of bring it back down. And then a few minutes later, no more attention. They escalate. Shh, you're being too quiet, you know. And I think that happens at our house. I mean, if our boys are playing, you know, on the porch quietly, we don't say anything to them. But as soon as they're like, hey, don't stop. Noah punched me. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. You know, and then we'll go out there. And so then it's, you know, so that recruits our attention. And so I think there's a lot of times that kids learn to recruit, I call it kind of recruiting attention for whenever you're not giving them any. I mean, how many times have you sat, your kids sat doing what they're supposed to do and you say nothing to them? But as soon as they whine, you're like, oh, stop whining. And then I've got to go deal with the, you know. And so, yeah, I think that's very possible. But again, it goes back to what are they trying to get or what are they trying to avoid? And I think that in a lot of those cases, it's trying just to get your attention. And if whining gets your attention, there was a video that his dad took of this little kid who was whining, and he would walk to another room. The kid would quit whining, walk into the room, look at the dad, fall down and cry. The dad Then move to another room, and the kid would stop crying, get up, walk in there, look at the dad, fall down. You know, but that's, I don't think that little kid was trying to manipulate them. I think they were just communicating, hey, I have a need. Can you help me meet my need? And I think that's where we, as the parents and as the adults, we have to put down our devices. You know, I mean, we have to pay attention to our kids and see, you know, what are their needs? Because the way to get a kid to stop whining is to model for them and to give them, you know, give them the words to use, to give them give them what it is that they're seeking, and hopefully try to prevent it. And I think you can prevent some of it, not all of it, but I know when Noah's really tired and he's whiny, when Carrie acknowledges he's tired, Noah, I see that you're really tired, it's almost like it gives him permission to stop whining. So, you know, he's like, and she's like, well, Noah, I think you're probably just tired. And it's just like when she says that, a light bulb goes on in his head like, yeah, that's what's wrong with me. I'm tired. But he didn't have the ability to think that through and say, well, I'm tired. That's probably why I'm acting this way. But she's models for him and gives him the words to use so that, you know, so that in the future, what he can say is, when I feel this way, that means that I feel tired. So then I can say to mom or to dad, hey, I'm tired. And so, you know, that's should help to begin to reduce, you know, the amount of whining that they do.
Sometimes I think we can assume, too, that our children even understand what whining means. So, you know, maybe you stop with your child and say, look, you know, this is what I've decided. And, you know, I know sometimes you think if you keep complaining long enough, I'm going to change my mind. We call that whining. Yeah. And I want you to know that that is my decision. And so you can continue to whine all you want, but I'm not going to change my point. But then you have to stick to that.
Right.
Right.
And then that's on us as the parents.
Right.
And the adults.
Does there come a time where it's appropriate to actually discipline a child for whining?
You know, I mean,
beyond just ignoring it? You know what I mean?
I would say, that's kind of, that's a kind of a case by case basis of what would you do. And if you really think about it, I mean, when you're teaching them what to do, you really are disciplining them, because, you know, discipline is creating a set of skills, you know, and increasing a set of skills. So every time that you model for them what to do, you know, your kid stands at the refrigerator and they're whining because they want something out of the refrigerator. And it may be that you say, no, you can't have it right now. And if you say, no, you can't have it right now, you have to stick to, no, you can't have it right now. And then, you know, if it were me, I would either just walk away.
Right.
I mean, that's an easy intervention. Or I would either try to get them engaged in another activity and get their mind off of it. That's the beautiful thing about young kids. You can get you can get them distracted very easily.
Sure.
That's another thing you can do. Or you can just let them whine it out, because eventually they're going to be like, okay, well, that didn't work. And they'll move on, because you're only going to engage in the behavior for a certain amount of time anyway. Or on the flip side of that, a kid standing at the refrigerator whining, and you know they probably are thirsty. So instead of them whining, you can say, you know, what do you want? And if they go, ha, 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 and just point, you know, you say, then you model for them, say, I want something to drink. And, you know, and of course, if the kid's really little, they're not going to say all that. But if they can say drink or want or something, to use a word as opposed to a whine, then we say, oh, good, you said you wanted something to drink. Here you go. Here's you, something to drink. And that's what we have to do, is, you know, either give them words to use or show them what they need to do. And, you know, because I know, again, with Noah, he'll whine when he's trying to put something together and it won't go together. And he'll be like, I'm like, well, look, here's how it goes. You put it like this. So instead of saying stop whining, I say, let me show you how to put these things together, or let me show you how this works. And so once I show him, then it reduces the likelihood of him whining. So it's a hard thing. And believe me, like I said, I get it. One thing I would definitely say is I would not give in to the whining. I would either you teach them the words to use to, like you said, to give them the words to use to narrate what it is that they want. That's the word I was looking for.
He is Dr. Alan Alday. Alan, do you have time to stick around for a few minutes on the other side of the break?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, good. We'll continue on the other side of the break. Hour two of the Mike Allen Show coming up. Again, your questions or comments, 573-4-BREAD-4. This is the Mike Allen Show on BreadBox Media.